Welcome to the Israel Daily News Podcast. I'm your host, Shanna Fold, and I'm here to get you caught up quickly. I've got some top news stories for you today from Israel, and guess what? You're listening, so you're already on top of your game. Survive and thrive, people. Knowledge is the best weapon. Today is Thursday, June 25th, 2026 in the Gregorian calendar, and the 10th of Tammuz, 5786 in the Hebrew calendar. Stay tuned for the end of the show. We have a Torah thought by Rabbi Yossi Madvig of Oswego, New York. Now, let's get to the news. We have a very recent update, which is that apparently Iran fired onto a ship in the Gulf of Oman, despite there's supposed to be a ceasefire. The UN's International Maritime Organization paused its plan to evacuate around 11,000 sailors who've been stranded on about 600 ships after the cargo vessel was struck by an unknown projectile on Thursday. The evacuation had begun following a preliminary U.S.-Iran agreement aimed at ending the conflict and reopening maritime traffic. Now, that's the MOU, the Memorandum of Understanding that we spoke about earlier in the week and last week. Although the damaged ship was not part of the evacuation convoy, the incident is raising new security concerns. The International Maritime Organization says it's temporarily suspending the operation until it can confirm that the route is safe for all vessels. Central Israel came to a halt on Wednesday as thousands of ultra-Orthodox demonstrators blocked highways 1 and 4 in mass nationwide anti-draft protests, with Highway 6 getting heavily congested and 27 other major roads blocked by the protests throughout the country as well. The demonstrations are being organized by Agudat Israel, part of the United Torah Judaism's Knesset faction, and other groups within the Haredi community, as well as, when I say Haredi, I mean Orthodox, as well as members of Knesset, Yitzhak Goldknopf of UTJ and Michael Malkieli of the Shas party, who showed up for these demonstrations as well. Footage came up showing several physical altercations between protesters and pedestrians, including an attempt from a passerby to prevent demonstrators from blocking the road, and a violent altercation between protesters and locals as a at a residential complex in the southern city of Arad. There was also video shown of a man brandishing a gun from the driver's seat of his car. People were frustrated and angry that they couldn't move on the roads. Israel police report that they saw protesters getting out of their vehicles at the Harel interchange on Highway 1, entering traffic lanes on foot and trying to stop this. Officers noted that this was not what was agreed upon between protesters and organizers and the government. Since then, these protests have been deemed illegal. Of course, these protests of this size, you need to get a permit. So I'm sure there was some prior discussion about this. During the mess of these protests, however, a 29-year-old pregnant woman was injured in a car accident on Route 1 after traffic slowed down and there was a chain reaction of small car collisions. Emergency responders said that this 29-year-old pregnant woman suffered a moderate abdominal injury, and she was taken to Shaare Tzedek Medical Center for treatment. The convoy was heading to a demonstration outside a military prison to protest the enlistment of Haredi men into the IDF. The protest also caused traffic disruptions and disruptions in several cities across Israel. Police intervened during the convoy after United Torah Judaism Chairman Yitzhak Goldknopf was reportedly seen driving slowly with emergency lights activated. Many Orthodox protesters oppose mandatory military service because they believe full-time Torah study is essential to preserving Jewish religious life, and they argue that military service conflicts with their religious values and their way of life. While many Orthodox Israelis do both Torah study and service in the army, there are some people who feel that they have to dedicate all their time to study And this has become a major point of contention. Some would argue that the reason the Jewish people have survived all of these generations is due to the Torah and due to certain parts of the population really studying it and bringing it forward to the future. Other parts of Israeli society say, hey, we are all serving. There's a draft in this country, and that means everyone has to serve, and there can't be an exemption. Everybody needs to do it. On Thursday, so that's today, the Defense Ministry marked 20 years since the abduction of Gilad Shalit to Gaza by releasing never-before-seen military footage detailing the moments that led up to his abduction, minute by minute. These reports, received in real time by an IDF command center, included communication with soldiers in the field on protected devices, as well as handwritten updates. While this information had been previously reported, the new material highlights critical delays in the IDF response time to the cross-border abduction. Gilad Shalit is a former Israeli soldier who was captured by the Hamas terror group in 2006 and held in captivity in Gaza for more than 5 years. He was released in 2011 in a prisoner exchange. Today he is alive, he's well. And he got married several years ago, and he got married 10 years after his release from Gaza, and he was there for 5 years. According to this new report, the first report about the attack came in at 5:13 a.m. on the morning of June 25th, 2006, noting that numerous explosions had been heard near Kerem Shalom, and it was initially believed to be rocket fire. Only a minute later, the log noted that there were casualties. After 90 minutes, soldiers in the field noted that one of their own had been missing. And minutes later, a commander issued a Hannibal order, which would have allowed IDF soldiers to take any measure, including shooting Shalit, to prevent his abduction. About a decade later, the Hannibal order was updated, allowing for the continued use of aggressive force at special times, extenuating circumstances, but not to shoot soldiers directly. At around 7:15 a.m. on that morning, soldiers radioed in that they found a blood-stained jacket and a helmet near the Gaza border. It still took about 45 minutes to identify Shalit as the abducted soldier. Two soldiers that were killed at the time include Lieutenant Hanan Barak and Staff Sergeant Pavel Slutsky. While Shalit was in Gaza, his parents led a nationwide campaign pressing for a prisoner exchange to get him back. Well, on October 18, 2011, 1,027 prisoners were exchanged for Shalit. At the time, more than 80% supported it, but it later became quite unpopular. Terrorists responsible for the massive October 7th attack were actually found to have been released in that very exchange. And this includes Yahya Sinwar, the number one terrorist behind the October 7th attacks. He was the mastermind behind the attacks that killed 1,200 people and took some 250 hostage. And he was released in that deal. And he was released into the wild. And he was allowed to come back, he was allowed to rehabilitate himself, and he was allowed to continue on to create a plan to destroy Israel. And by the way, Yahya Sinwar was actually treated while in Israeli jail for brain tumors inside of his brain, and Israeli doctors saved his life while he was in custody, while he was in jail. They saved his life during that time, and he was released from prison alive and well enough to go on and plot the destruction of Israel. A terror tunnel was discovered near the Azaim crossing, a major crossing connecting Jerusalem and Maale Adumim. The tunnel was first reported by the civil administration, the governing authority in Judea and Samaria, or the West Bank, depending on what you call it. And they started looking into this after receiving warning signs of tunnels in the area. Police officers from the Judea and Samaria district, along with border police personnel, dug 25 meters below the surface, that's about 82 feet, scoured the area, recovered digging equipment, water bottles, gloves, face masks, and additional items from the site. The tunnel was apparently excavated and intended to be used to carry out terror attacks, as well as a route for smuggling Palestinians into Israel. Two Palestinian men in their 30s, a resident of East Jerusalem and a resident of an Arab village 2 miles from Jerusalem, were both arrested and are currently in custody. We have a death to report of an IDF soldier, Chief Sergeant First Class Basil Swaid, who died Wednesday during an operation in southern Lebanon when a vehicle overturned. Swaid, the 32-year-old soldier from Pikin in the north, that's a mixed city in the north, was a driver in the 75th Battalion of the 7th Armored Brigade. A note that I want to tell you about Pikin. Pikin is thought to be a point of coexistence. There was a large Jewish population, and in fact, some of the oldest, the families in Israel with the longest lineage of being Jewish and living in Israel continuously come from Pikin, and throughout the years, there were many different populations that lived there. Christian Arabs, the Druze, the Jews, all different ethnic backgrounds lived in this place. And this person in question is a Druze. And a lot of them really put their lives on the line to join the army and defend Israel because it is a part of their culture and is a part of their belief system that wherever they live, they need to really get into the culture of the police. That's the Druze people. When not actively serving, Swaid worked at Rambam Medical Center as an operations coordinator. During the incident, another soldier was injured and taken to the hospital for emergency care. The Israel Daily News sends its heartfelt condolences to the family, friends, and community of Chief Sergeant First Class Basil Swaid. A big upset in the United States of America for Israel supporters. New York City Mayor Zohran Mamdani scored 3 major primary victories as part of his agenda to transform the Democratic Party into a socialist machine. Claire Valdez and Daria Lisa Chevalier, far-left members of the Democratic Socialists of America, won the Democratic Party's congressional primaries in New York City on Tuesday. New York City's Mayor Zohran Mamdani not only endorsed, but also campaigned heavily for both candidates who utilized anti-Israel rhetoric as a major aspect of their platforms, even drawing people in their crowds at their rallies to shout Free Palestine. The success of Chevalier in particular displays the growing support for far-left anti-Israel politicians. She won the race regardless of her history of extremist comments toward not only Israel, but the United States and the Democratic Party. She's refused to condemn the Hamas terror group, despite the USA considers it an official terror group, and posts online claiming that Israel does not exist. She defeated incumbent Adriano Espaillat, despite her lack of prior political experience. I remember when Espaillat, a Dominican-American, got into office, and he was very professional, caring, very passionate, and he's been very fair on the subject of Israel. He was actually the first ever Dominican-American elected to Congress in 2016, and I remember that because I was working in local news at New York One at the time that he got in. And I remember it very well. It was a big deal for Dominican Americans and Dominican American New Yorkers. And now he's out. Both Chevalier and Valdez are expected to win the general elections come November, which will double the DSA representation in Congress. The outcomes highlight the popularity of democratic socialism and the anti-Israel views that hold and are actually gaining support in the most Jewish city in all of the United States. But perhaps the biggest upset came in New York's 10th congressional district. Former New York comptroller Brad Lander, a Mamdani-backed candidate and fierce critic of Israel, defeated incumbent two-term Congressman Dan Goldman, despite being Jewish. Lander is a fierce critic of Israel and has heavily labeled Israel's military campaign in Gaza as a genocide. And he's promised to back legislation that would restrict and limit military aid to Israel. He also made pro-Israel lobbying a central campaign issue. A Jewish person making pro-Israel lobbying a central issue for his campaign. Despite his harsh messaging, Lander personally identifies himself as, quote, a liberal Zionist. Lander's victory over Goldman came just 2 days after Goldman visited a Brooklyn coffee shop and was labeled as a genocide enabler over his stance on Israel. The shop, called Poetica Coffee, which is a New York City coffee chain founded by an Uzbek immigrant, later took to Instagram to share this incident, ban him, and denounce his support for Israel. So they doubled down on it. The post included a refund of his purchase. The Department of Justice's DOJ Civil Rights Division opened an investigation into Poetica Coffee's Brooklyn branch to determine whether the incident violated federal public accommodations based on religion or national origin. But the Civil Rights Act of 1964 specifically states that discrimination is prohibited in all public settings, including restaurants. While the act mainly prohibits discrimination based on race, skin color, and national origin, federal sources say this does apply to Jewish Americans because of their shared ethnic, ancestral, and tribal traits, and because they are protected under titles number 6 and 7 of the act. So a lot of people are piping up online and in public forums saying that this is the beginning of the end. Some people are likening this. I've heard two different people say, one Instagram influencer said that this is reminding them of Soviet Russia. Someone said this is reminding them of the Nazi Party, about the beginnings of parties that had fringe elements. For example, the Democratic Socialists, which is considered a fringe element and is now becoming mainstream and is taking sort of radical ideologies and making it popular, and at least making it feel popular and bringing it to the forefront and convincing everybody that this is the new wave, when actually this could be quite destructive. If you used to be a monthly supporter of the Israel Daily News, please join us once again. Our platform discontinued its feature for taking contributions. But don't worry, that was a while ago, and we have since opened up our own distribution. The Israel Daily News now has a direct donation platform. Listeners can contribute monthly or make one-time donations directly through the website. Your support helps keep our independent journalism alive and growing. You can also follow Israel Daily News across our social media platforms on Instagram, TikTok, X, and LinkedIn at israeldaily.news or Israel Podcast on X. The IDF conducted a military exercise Tuesday in the Gulf of Eilat and the Golan Heights. So we're going south and we're going north as part of ongoing efforts to strengthen security preparedness. The drill comes just weeks after Israeli forces reportedly thwarted an attempted jet ski infiltration from Jordan into Israeli territory. According to the military, the vessel was identified and forced to turn back before entering Israel. The exercise also follows warnings from Shin Bet Chief David Zini, who has reportedly raised concerns about the possibility of a large-scale attack on Eilat, similar to the October 7th Hamas assault. Zini has called on security officials to prioritize preparations for potential threats arriving from Jordanian territory as well as by sea. Israel will be sending aid to Venezuela after two devastating earthquakes less than a minute apart from one another. They shook the country on Thursday. Israel's foreign ministry and health ministry will be sending official delegations, along with ISRAAID, Israel's leading humanitarian rescue organization. They go everywhere. And Karen Kayemet LeIsrael, Jewish National Fund, that's KKLJNF, in case you recognize the acronym. According to predictive modeling, the death toll is likely to reach into the thousands, with a probability that it could exceed 10,000 deaths. And now for a Torah thought by Rabbi Yossi Madvig of Oswego, New York.
We finally caught up to Israel on the Torah portions. We have a double portion outside of Israel, Chukat and Balak, whereas in Israel it's only the one portion. And I always like to see what the connection is between the Haftorah and the Torah portion. And in the Parsha of Balak, the king, whose name is Balak, he hires a prophet, Bilam, to curse the Jewish people in order to get them to, you know, lose favor with God and everything so they can defeat them. And in the end, they end up sending out these the Moabite women to entice them. And so in the Haftorah, God contrasts the Jewish people's fidelity to him with his concern for them. And, you know, primarily showing how, you know, how he thwarted the whole design of Bilam and Balak. And both in Bilam's prophecies and in this Haftorah, the Jewish people's strength and boldness are both described as being compared to lions. And also, the Parsha of Balak takes place just before the Jewish people are going to enter the land of Israel. They're positioned opposite of Jericho, right when they're going ready to enter the land. And also, the prophecy in this Haftorah describes the transition period between the exile and the final redemption. And both of them have visions of the messianic future. At the end of the Haftorah, after describing the great things that God does, it says you're going to ask, you know, with what can I come to God before God? Right? What do we have? God gives us everything. He helps us. And what can we bring to God? And in the Parsha, in the Torah portion, Bilam, he tries to bend God's will by offering up all these sacrifices to God. And of course, that failed because that's not what God wants. Right? He wants our love and obedience. And the sacrifices only have any kind of meaning in the context of loving and being obedient to God. Like the sages say in Pirkei Avot, in the ethics of our fathers, to do his will as if it were your own will in order that he do your will as if it were his own will. So we have to submit ourselves to God. And here too, the Jewish people are portrayed as willing to give up any material possession in order to reinstate themselves in God's good graces. But God isn't interested in our material possessions. What does he want? He says, I just want that you are properly motivated, right? To have good behavior, to follow and be obedient and love God and do the right thing. And that's how we are a light to the nations, which that's not in this Haftorah, the idea of light to the nations, but that's the same idea, right? That we are portraying just... you know, not to ourselves, but also to the entire world, how to be godly and how to live in the fullness of God's desires. Shabbat shalom.
Well, thank you for those words of Torah, Rabbi, and thank you for explaining to us how, because of the year and the way that the portions are separated in the Torah, sometimes we have to double up and sometimes we have to have two in Israel and sometimes we might have two in the United States. And I actually got a little confused because here in Israel, we actually did, we separated the portions in a different way. And so I released a Torah thought that was more relevant to the United States audience. And I actually contacted the rabbi and I said, hey, I think we released the wrong Torah thought this week. It's not the right portion. And he said, no, it's the right portion in the United States, but it's not the right portion in Israel. So thanks for educating us on that. And thanks for taking us through that and noting that for us, it really is special to be in the Holy Land. And sometimes there are these little moments where I realize that. All right. Well, that is it for today's show. Today is Thursday, June 25th, 2026. I want to note that it's very late. It's at midnight, so we are Thursday going into Friday. I had an audio issue. I had to rerun the entire show. So we recorded on Thursday afternoon. We updated our script, and then we recorded again Thursday night at midnight going into Friday. So you could say it's June 26th already. Tel Aviv has a low of 24 degrees Celsius and a high of 27 degrees. That's 75 degrees Fahrenheit for the low, going up to 81 degrees for the high. We are everywhere. Don't forget to sign up to our Israel Weekly News Wrap. The Israel Weekly News Wrap is a newsletter with the top five stories coming out of Israel from throughout the week. It always has a personal note from me at the top. And underneath that, we have the top five stories coming out of Israel. You can sign up for our newsletter at israeldailynews.org. Scroll down to the bottom, drop your email address in. A big thank you goes out to our incredible sponsor, Marianne Vollinger, our writer, Perry Schwartz, who's always up on the updates, and our associate producer, Lori May, as well as our new interns, Alex, Leia, and Hannah. Have a great and productive day and an excellent weekend. Shabbat shalom, everyone.